But first of all, it's time for my pas de deux with Bruce. I understand you're somewhere exotic.
I'm exotic only if you're unfamiliar with the wonderfully cosmopolitan city of Amman. Yeah, I'm in Amman, Jordan this week. My day job, the DART Center for Journalism and Trauma, is leading a seminar for reporters who are covering the Syria refugee crisis. Interesting week of immersion into the issues in this part of the world.
Bruce, the shutdown is now in its fifth week. 800,000 workers and even more contractors now unpaid.
It's a remarkable time. I mean, look, coming to leave the U.S. the other day to come here, I went through security being searched by TSA workers who have not received a paycheck in a month. You have people all over the country who get federal housing subsidies who have not received their checks, who are at risk of eviction. This is a shutdown unlike any other we've had, not only because it's longer. Past shutdowns have tended to be about a broad philosophical argument between president and Congress about exactly how much money should be spent, whether there should be a deficit, other things. This is the first time that we've had the entire federal government, or what are called the non-essential parts of it, which really are essential to a lot of people's lives. First time we've had the government shut down because there's just one contentious program, of course, Trump's wall, that a president wants and that Congress doesn't want to give him.
Pelosi doesn't show much sign of blinking.
Well, it's an interesting question. Republicans in Congress, on the one hand, Republicans in the Senate, are making a show of solidarity with his non-blinking. The reality is, though, that the power of the purse is with Congress. It's clear that the new Democratic majority in the House of Representatives is saying we will not negotiate while the government is closed. Open the government. The Republicans in the Senate have it in their power to pass a budget. In fact, the budget that they're arguing over now is the very budget that the Republican Senate passed before Christmas, and now suddenly, because of the wall and Trump, they're no longer willing to do so. It may seem an intractable situation, but political reality is beginning to set in. There's a remarkable new Marist poll that shows that the president's support among white suburban men, theoretically a big part of his base, has fallen by 18 points since before Christmas. Men without college degrees, it's fallen 7%. You go to big industrial areas of the Midwest that were the swing states for the Republicans and for Trump in the 2016 election, and those are communities that are really hurting as a result of federal money being withheld. The White House strategy seems to be this is going to make people blame the Democrats. I don't think there's anybody really, other than a narrow faction, who does. Everybody understands that Trump has essentially gone on a one-man strike, preventing the federal government from working. It's a remarkable time.
Trump, of course, has got no wiggle room now, has he?
Well, this is a situation he often has created for himself in politics and in business, where he stakes out a piece of ground which is untenable, and he holds it even when it hurts him. I think there are Republicans in Congress who would like to find a face-saving way out. But if we go by the president's actions over this last weekend, in which he offered a supposed compromise 3 years of not bothering the dreamers, the deferred action arrivals people, who he is the person who he initiated the expulsion of, no Democrat was going to go for that. And indeed, the dreamers themselves looked at it and said, this is ridiculous. You're promising us at best a temporary reprieve in your efforts to deny us citizenship. It's a negotiating strategy that is based on producing chaos and keeping the president at the center of attention, but it's not actually a negotiating strategy that wins. And, you know, those who cover him as a businessman recognize this from his stewardship of his casinos, when he got into big arguments with unions and big arguments with regulators, that he could not win, or could only win at such enormous cost that his Atlantic City casino went broke. It's in the long run, this is not a tenable situation for the Republicans. The question is, what's it going to take for them to separate themselves from the president, or for the president himself to declare victory and withdraw, which is really where this is going to lead.
It certainly makes his prospects for 2020 look pretty bleak. And of course, candidates are forming on the right and left for the Democrats.
Well, indeed, we had, you know, Senator Kamala Harris go in formally yesterday on Martin Luther King Day, the child of Jamaican and South Asian immigrants, now a U.S. senator, former prosecutor. It is almost certain that Joe Biden is going to go in. Nobody knows who really is going to win in this one. I think I tend to think that the Democrats will be looking for a forward-looking candidate rather than a candidate who hearkens to the past, rather than an elder statesman like Biden. But you know, there are now at least 20 contenders for the Democratic nomination, a process that doesn't even begin formally until a year from now. But the electioneering has already begun, with people jockeying for position and funding.
Bruce, do the Democrats have a legislative agenda that they want to push through this year?
Well, I think there are several agendas. First of all, they do want to push through immigration reform. The question is, of course, about the wall, and they want a Democratic version of this. You know, there. If you talk to someone like some of the new dynamic freshmen Democrats in the House, the new majority, like Ocasio-Cortez, they're talking about tax reform. In her case, talking about a return to the days when billionaires would be taxed at a very high marginal tax rate of 70%. And there's an argument that this has started already about whether American tax rates have now gone too low. The reality is that, you know, the Democrats in the House know that there's not a lot of legislation they're going to be able to get through. I think their primary agenda is going to be investigative, is going to be looking not only at Mueller and the Russia investigation and Michael Cohen and all of this stuff, but looking at corruption in the Trump administration. We had a federal court yesterday, or last week rather, we had a federal court uphold the lawsuit against the Trump administration for violating what's called the Emoluments Clause of the U.S. Constitution, that constitution that says the executive branch shouldn't be doing business with entities that make money for the president. The president shouldn't be taking gifts from foreign powers. Thanks to hotel rooms at the Trump Hotel that various foreign embassies have bought, that's become an issue. There's all sorts of stuff that will be the primary agenda in a functional way of the Democrats going into the next year. They will talk about child and parental leave. They will talk about shoring up the Affordable Care Act against Republican efforts to tear it down. There's a lot of legislation there, but I think standing up to the Trump administration and trying to create a new Democratic majority out of that is going to be their main goal.
Now, BuzzFeed promote themselves as the future of journalism. They've been embroiled in a big row once again, Mueller and Cohen.
Well, indeed. I mean, and look, BuzzFeed has a crack investigative team that has done some of the most important, has gotten some of the most important political and investigative scoops of the last couple of years. But two of their reporters did get, it seems, out over their own skis a bit last week with this very dramatic story saying that the special prosecutor had evidence that Michael Cohen, the president's former lawyer, had been directed to lie to Congress by the president. This immediately got talk of impeachment going because that's a clear obstruction of justice action and clearly suborning perjury. 2 days later, the special counsel's office did something it has rarely done since this investigation began, which was issue a public statement. And the public statement, it essentially said BuzzFeed's reporting was factually wrong. And exactly where it's wrong is not clear from the statement, but it seems to indicate that whatever sources BuzzFeed was using did not weren't consistent with what the special prosecutor is actually doing in this case. BuzzFeed is sticking to its guns and saying they will be vindicated in the long run. However, no other news organization has been able to confirm the story. And it's coming at a time, of course, when the president looks for any opportunity to smack the press. And he welcomed, for the first time, welcomed a statement from Robert Mueller's office. You know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of long-term fallout from this, but in the short run, I think it's got a lot of news organizations a little bit nervous about reporting too quickly and too readily on where Mueller's investigation is actually going. We keep hearing they're getting ready to issue a final report. We keep hearing these rumors. But those, I think, are now going to stay pretty vague. I think news organizations are going to keep their powder dry without ironclad confirmation of the report, particularly since last week the Attorney General nominee, Mr. Barr, did pledge to be as transparent as possible in the release of the report and pledged as well to let Mueller complete his work. So I think we may see perhaps a little bit of cooling of the journalistic jets on the Mueller probe until there's actually something to report.
As you know, we're talking Pelosi in the next story, but I understand that she's backpedaling on any threat of impeachment.
Well, she herself was never a big fan of impeachment, or rather was not rushing out on it. There's two factions in the Democratic House now. There is many of the younger representatives and some of the more activist-oriented ones who are saying, essentially, that's got to be the job of this Congress. The Speaker's position has been it's impeachment is the ultimate remedy under the Constitution, but it is way too soon and way too early to begin talking about that, and that an impeachment itself cannot be, should not be the goal of this Congress. My own, if I were betting $20, I would say we will probably still end up there, but I think she is, her view would be that she already is portrayed as Trump's nemesis, and if the president can wield as a cudgel the threat of impeachment from the Democratic majority in Congress, it will only inflame the most loyal faction of Trump voters. And I think Pelosi also in that sense is trying to play to her quiet relationships with Republicans in the House and in the Senate, saying, you're not going to be squeezed on this until you really have to be.
Now, fasten your seatbelts, listeners. It's going to be a bumpy ride, and we will be watching very closely via Bruce Shapiro. Bruce, of course, columnist with The Nation magazine and exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.